I told myself that I was going to go on 100 first dates and come back and write about how I felt with every data point. I was literally training my AI model inside me.
I do think that some people are just a raw, like, you show me you love me by just pure hours. And I think that that's one of the things that we benefit from having a similar, maybe ambition profile or something. And that, like, I really understand the value of each of those hours.
There's a lot of people that me and Alex could have been with and be on some sort of happiness scale with. The difference is that we might have had to compromise on certain dreams, or we might have had to be different people, but humans are adaptable. And I think it's actually better to build a loving relationship with somebody and maybe sacrifice like a dream or two that you had for your own individual life than it is to go your entire life searching for that perfect thing and never finding it.
Hey everyone, for this episode of Modern Relationships, I sit down with a couple who have been together 6 years and both lead fast-paced lives in tech. Tara is the now exited co-founder and CEO of Rupa Health, and Alex is building a company still in stealth. Up ahead, you'll hear how treating dating like a founder led Tara to an unexpected insight about what really matters in finding your person.
Well, Tara, Alex, welcome to Modern Relationships. Thanks for joining.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Don't know what we're getting ourselves into, but I'm here for it.
Tara, we were talking offline, and you know, one thing I was struck by was how deliberate your approach to relationships has been, how thoughtful it has been, and how maybe non-standard, because most people don't really think that deliberately about finding the right person. They kind of just luck into it or don't luck into it, and either pick the wrong person or don't find a person because they're so focused on other things that it doesn't happen for them. And so I'm curious, as a backdrop, if you can take us behind the curtain of how you've thought deliberately about finding your person and maybe tell a little bit about your story.
Oh my goodness. Okay. I think I gave you a very quick snapshot of it. But, you know, I had this insight growing up where we all are kind of aware that we're born into a single like socioeconomic status. And that is, you know, that determines so much of our life. And who our parents are also is like this thing that we are born into. And we, you know, it determines so much of our life. And I think for better or worse, all of us grow up with one model of a relationship, and that is our parents. And we either, you know, we either think that that is the best thing in the world, we need to have that, or like most of us, we want something completely different. And so for me, my parents actually had a traditional Indian arranged marriage. They knew each other 15 minutes and they said, cool, this will work. And that was it. And it forced me really early on to recognize that that's not what I wanted. And if I, you know, if I was going to go find the right relationship for me, I would have to figure out how to go about doing that. So my parents never dated anybody. They never went through the selection process. Their parents basically did that for them. And so I was like, okay, cool. This is up to me. So I got to figure out how to do it. And so when it came to, I guess, like thinking about dating and relationships, I initially like probably took the approach of everybody else, which is just trial and error, right? You meet people in college and you date them and you see if you like them and all that. And then it hit me that this is the single most important decision that you'll ever make in your life. And with everything else in life, we study it, we learn about it, we experiment, we try things out. Like, we're much more systematic about it and deliberate. And I was like, why isn't this like that as well? And so I basically, I mean, it sounds crazy, I think, to a lot of people, but I read so many books. I ran so many experiments on myself, but pre-meeting Alex. And I think the impetus for all of this and kind of the backdrop is that I was actually dating somebody else before I met Alex. And this guy was truly amazing. He was such an awesome person. I wouldn't be me without him. Rupa wouldn't exist without him. Like, there's so much good that came from that relationship. But something deep down in my gut knew that it was like 95% right, but not 100% right. And I'm somebody who wants to go for the 100%. We ended up breaking up. And then, you know, I was 27 years old and most of my friends were getting married at the time. And so it was, all right, we're going to go figure out what was missing, what I want, and how to go find that. And then, you know, I'll condense it now and stop talking, then we can talk about any of the details. But basically, by the time I met Alex, a year and a half later, he was my first Bumble date, if you can believe that. And within 15 minutes, I was like, this is the guy I'm going to marry. It was very clear.
It's funny you mentioned your parents. They did 15 minutes. They were going to get married, but this is a different 15 minutes. But you yourself knew. And so
that is actually really funny. And I've never put that together. Yeah.
And so it's poetic in a way. And so what did you see in those first 250? Like, what made it so obvious?
And by the way, he felt this way as well.
Wow.
But Alex did zero of the, like.
That was a little bit on the opposite of that.
Yeah, Alex, why don't you tell your story?
Yeah, well, I do think that a lot of your worldview is made up by the, like, environment that you grew up in. And I was, like, really fortunate to have two, like, incredibly loving parents. And that was, like, the world that I knew, that you have this, like, super high expectation of a partner and a teammate. But I didn't necessarily want the same relationship my parents wanted. And through this process, being a founder and like being like work obsessed and all this other stuff, I also knew that this is like the most important decision that you make. But I just figured I would never end up like compromising the kind of quality of partner I'd end up finding. And then because of this combination of like being pretty work obsessed and never willing to like compromise, I just thought I would be like 50 and single. And then at that point, I would have like the, you know, midlife crisis. And it was like the scheduled midlife crisis was going to happen, where I would then resort my priorities and eventually be like, oh, hey, I should, you know, kind of change or lower some expectation or change what I'm looking for. So it was kind of unintentional. But I think both of us knew, like, you know, 15 minutes was like, it's like, that's the upper bound. It was really quick for us to kind of both know that, It was really real.
Say more about how a lot of people meet someone they're attracted to, but they don't necessarily think, wow, this is my, you know, future husband or wife, or what made you immediately know?
So one of my biggest realizations around relationships is it's a decision like any other decision in your life, except it's a big decision. And so people make decisions in very different ways. Some people are very, very logical about it and they need to go through all the pros and cons and they need to like understand it logically. Other people are very emotional about it. Other people like go based off of their gut. And what I learned is that if you look at your life and think about like the big decisions that you've made in your life, the decision on who you are going to spend your life with will probably look something similar to that, like the how you came up with it. And so for me, the way that I generally have made decisions in my life is I study, I learn, I train my gut in a very kind of mechanical way and until it becomes automatic. And then my gut just knows. And so I basically spent a year, like I told myself that I was going to go on 100 first dates and come back and write about how I felt, what I liked about that person, and what I didn't like about that person, all these things. And so like with every data point, it was literally training, you know, my AI model inside me. And then when I met Alex, I just kind of knew. And I think—
What number date? Did you go through the 100 or what number date was that?
No, he ruined it for me. I was probably like, he was probably like 60 something or something like that. But I think that—
God, were you dated?
Yeah, but I've been through enough. And it's interesting because I did all the things that I think a lot of people would find embarrassing. Like I went to a—
Give us the whole list. People are here to, you know, listen to this podcast to learn things that, you know, may not be obvious. So I want you to tell everything that you think might sound crazy, I want you to say on this podcast.
I love it. Okay, so men are from Mars, women are from Venus. Like, read the book. It is like men and women are different, or feminine and masculine energy are very different. But I read every relationship book, not just that one. But I think that one is one that people are kind of embarrassed to pick up. I took a relationship course and I made my roommate, my friend, my acupuncturist, like everybody come with me as well. And it was a 3-week weekend course for women. And part of it was like learning how to accept compliments and just all of these things that I think a lot of women aren't really encouraged to do anymore. We're supposed to be like strong and that's like just all of this stuff. I have a lot of thoughts on that, which we can get to. But I took the relationship course. I went to Tony Robbins' Date with Destiny. I wrote out a feelings list. So one of the biggest things that the woman who ran the course, I got her to be my coach as well. So she basically helped me go through all of these like internal blockers and insecurities like that we all have that are kind of stopping us, because like generally speaking, like our ego gets in the way of us finding a really good relationship, and you kind of have to get that out of the way. And so one of the things I asked her was, hey, you know, I have this list, and I think a lot of people have this list of the type of person that they want to be with, even if it's not written down, it's in their head. And it has all these characteristics about a person. You know, here's, I want somebody who is ambitious and a startup founder or whatever, right? Like has X type of quality of life. Like, we can cook together. What if we all have our list? And I asked her, I was like, well, why, when I meet people who have all these qualities on the list, I'm not really attracted to them? And there's other people who I'm super attracted to who don't match this list at all. And what she told me was actually super interesting, and I've used it now for recruiting and all kinds of things. And it's basically that when we come up with characteristics are basically our shorthand for trying to understand someone's values. What we're really trying to get to is understand someone's values and see if we're values aligned. And so let me give a really clear explanation. So let's say that there's some people, you want to date somebody who is a startup founder. Two people want to be, you know, that's like on their criteria list. One person might want to date that founder because they value freedom and they value flexibility. The other person might want to date that person because want to date a founder because they are deeply want to be in control of their life. And they want to, you know, have 100% basically like say over what they're doing and things like that.
Autonomy.
Yeah. Those are two very different values. But on the, but people are basically saying, I'm going to attach it to this characteristic. And so instead of actually making a list of characteristics, she said, make a list of how you want to feel when you're with that person. And then basically, once you meet people, map back to that feelings list and see if those feelings match. And she's like, that will be a much stronger guide. And so I actually made these feelings lists. And you want to make them for different things. Like, how do I want to feel intellectually? How do I want to feel physically? How do I want to feel safe? Like, all of these different things. It's not just like one feelings list. So I made that list, kind of forgot about it, and then met Alex, and then went back to that list months later, and everything on that list had been hit. And it's super interesting because it actually has nothing to do with these external qualities and characteristics that so many of us are going after.
And what were some of the most important things on that list, just to give some examples?
Oh my gosh, let me think if I remember.
I feel like one had to be growth.
Yeah. I think it was that I wanted to feel supported, challenged in a kind way. I wanted to be like intellectually stimulated. That was a big one. I wanted to feel safe. I wanted to feel excited. Like, I'll have to go back. I'll literally send you a photo of it. I'll find it in my, I'll send you a photo of it.
And so what you're suggesting is when people do this sort of transformation of, it sort of changes from like 6'5", you know, super rich person to, you know, to sort of, I want to have these specific North Star feelings.
Yep. Yep. It's a much better guide.
Yeah. You said you interviewed 200 people about how they knew their partner was their person. What did you learn from that?
Interview is a strong word. I would just go up anytime and meet someone who was married. I'd ask them how they met their partner and when they knew.
Even divorce.
Yeah. And divorce too. And I'd say, hey, I asked every person I met who was divorced. This was over a span of like a year and a half, 2 years. I'd say, could you have guessed on your wedding day that you were going to get divorced? And with the exception of two people, every single person said yes. And they said, if I'd been really honest with myself, I would have known that this wasn't right.
What is the takeaway from that? Or just like, you know, in your gut, whether it's a hell yeah or no, basically?
Yeah, I think it ultimately is, are you doing this out of pure positive joy and it's like pulling you towards it? Or is there any semblance of fear in there or feeling like you're going to lose time or something like that? And pretty, I think that people know, and this is the thing, is like, we're so out of tune with what our gut is saying that if they were, you know, most people, if they're a, what they had told me is if they could have been honest with themselves and really listened, then they would have known.
Alex, how did you think about your criteria and or sort of what you were looking for, and how has that evolved over time, if it has?
Yeah, probably like kind of opposite in that I just wasn't intentional about it. Maybe at all. But I think that I think it's part of it. Like, having a bunch of friends who are at a point where they're like, dating is the number one most important thing. Or maybe more important is like, finding my partner is the most important thing. That's like a super tough position to be in, just because the stakes get so much higher. I do think that maybe part of it that made it easier is that I wasn't super actively analyzing everything. And I kind of feel like it's like the like music analogy is like, you know, when I used to like listen to music on a radio, I used to really like, you know, you find a song and you could actually like really, really like the song that came on. And then I feel like in the world of like infinite choice and optionality and constant evaluation of, do you like this song? Because you can play any other song in the whole wide world. you like find that even the kind of frequency of your like love for music maybe gets compromised a bit in those scenarios, because it's not as, yeah, it's like a freedom of choice or too much optionality and analytical nature of things.
Are you saying I was just the best because you didn't meet enough people?
No, I'm saying that actively seeking it, I do think that there was a lot of, maybe it's just closer to getting in tune with your gut, right? Like, yeah, and you know, I just like was, you know, when I think about meeting Tara and knowing, I thought I was going to have such a hard time coming to like conviction on a partner just because the bar was so high. And I think maybe being able to just truly like listen to intuition and gut and not be obsessed of like, is this the perfect right thing, whatever. It became so obvious very, very quickly. Yeah.
It was scary at how certain it felt for both of us.
And how old were you both when you met?
28.
Okay. So it's not like you were both like 35 or something and like, you know, super eager to, you know, needed to find something right away.
And we were both starting our companies. We both had it's like pre-seed companies.
Yeah. Of like high volatility. It's like not a lot of it maybe made sense perfectly at that moment, but it was really obvious. Yeah.
And to that point, I think one thing that we talk about a lot is I don't think I could have met Alex 5 years before and had that certainty, been ready for it. I believe in timing now in a way that I never did before. I think that we got lucky because I was such a different person even a handful of years.
And what do you think if Alex was 6 years older, which is another way of saying, what are your thoughts on sort of timing as it relates to age gap or maturity gap or sort of stage of life?
If he was 6 years older than me?
Yeah, yeah.
That's like now.
Yeah, if he was the age and stage of life where he is now and he had met you and you were, you know, the stage of life where you were 6 years ago.
So this goes to another strong belief I have around, like, you don't find the perfect person, you build the perfect relationship. Hmm. And so much of it is just growing together and being committed to growing together and recognizing that, like, no one is perfect and everybody's a work in progress. And I think we both were really understanding of that in one another. And to your point on growth, like, growth is a huge value of both of ours. And because of that, I think we were able to see each other as unfinished products and be excited to build together. And I think that if you have that, then age in that way might not matter as much. But I will say, like, 28 to 34 might be completely different of an age gap than 20 to 26 or something like that. So I don't know. Hard to tell.
That makes sense. Let's go back to your sort of, you know, autodidactic study. You're reading these books, you're taking these courses. Is what I'm gathering for you is seems the main takeaway is it helped you lean more into your femininity. I want you to further explain that and also share if there were other sort of major sort of lessons that other people should take from it.
Yeah, I'd say that was maybe 2% of what it was, in that I do think that women, especially ambitious, you know, women who want a career or are founders or whatever you want, whatever type of career there is, we're almost told that you don't need a guy. And if he does anything wrong, he's not the right one. And we're told this narrative that I actually think like really puts a disadvantage on us, because you don't want to be seen as the weak woman who is settling for a guy or who is putting a relationship above your work. And there's all these weird narratives. And I actually think it's a huge disservice, because the most powerful thing and the most powerful source of energy is having a foundation that you have built with somebody that then you feel free to go do whatever it is outside of that. And so I think for me, there was definitely coming into this like a sense of independence that I had because of a narrative that had been, you know, in the zeitgeist, I guess, is one way of saying it. And there was a certain role that I had to fill. And I remember, you know, raising our pre-seed, and it's always weird when there's a male investor and some of them ask you out, and then some of it's just always like a weird thing. And feeling like I needed to be this like independent person. And going through all of these learnings kind of made me realize that all relationships like need polarity. And at times, like, I might be that really aggressive, intense person at work, But actually in a relationship, I don't want to be that person. I want to be a little bit like, I want to be taken care of. I want to be, you know, I want a different type of relationship when it comes to like our personal life. And I think that all of those learnings made me realize that men and women are actually like very biologically different. And what I was wanting was natural, and to lean into that instead of trying to fit these stereotypes that maybe were part of society's zeitgeist at the time.
And so is awareness of what you said enough to be able to do that, or how do...
No, with these exercises where we stood in front of each other, you know, these women stood in front of each other and gave each other compliments, and we'd stand there and not squirm. And it's really uncomfortable to just stand there and receive a compliment. Receiving and feeling like you don't need to do everything yourself is a practice in and of itself. And so I would do that. Getting in touch with your feelings. What do you actually even feel? Can you recognize a feeling when you have one, when you're around somebody? Those types of things. Even just learning feelings vocabulary, that's a skill that I think most people don't have. We are happy, sad, excited, pissed, angry, whatever. But can you go beyond that and really dive deep into some of the more nuanced feelings and why they occur and things like that? And so there's lots of practices. I studied like nonviolent communication. Like we were so much more immature versions of ourselves. Like I think another thing that I really learned is there's two people in a relationship who have previously spent their entire lives separate and grown up in different worldviews, different, you know, homes, all of that. And so why do we expect that the language that we use and the traditions that we have and our weird customs and things like that should be easily understandable to the other person? And you have to be patient because none of this stuff comes automatically.
So, say more about this. You guys knew right away, but you know, like any relationship, I'm sure there were challenges in the beginning. You said you were immature versions of yourself. Talk about the biggest things that you guys did to grow either individually and as a couple.
Yeah, we definitely learned. We had to learn like a new language to talk through, to be able to like communicate with like words, like literally word choice and what they meant and associated meanings to those words. But there's also like Tara's brain is very different than how my brain works. And it actually probably follows like a lot of traditional gender differences. Like it was easier to hear that from friends who had also gone through like similar scenarios with their partner.
Okay, can you elaborate? Give an example.
Yeah, like my brain is like very linear, step by step. And Tara's is like absolute opposite of that. It's like she'll put together this, you know, node map or like scatter this giant graph of data.
She's a visionary.
Yeah, it's graph of information that then eventually has some like extremely novel and unique, powerful insight that comes together at this like last moment. And then so I'd say something and then she would like not respond to the thing that I said exactly or like either yes and or disagree with, either of which would have been fine. And she'll introduce like a new chaos point into the conversation. And I'm like, my brain, like you do that twice or three times and my brain like overloads. I'm like, I don't know how we're going to continue this conversation because there's four threads that I'm trying to run and go in parallel processing for. And that's like a pretty traditional male-female difference in conversations. And I think that both of us probably came from a spot where we were like unwilling to accept, maybe in the beginning at least, unwilling to accept that there's any difference between I think we wanted a super equal partnership in ways that also felt like a reason we wanted the same thing. That was really part of it in the beginning. That felt so, it's like we wanted something really unique and we really wanted the same thing. But anyways, yeah, so our brains work quite a bit differently. And I think that led to having to relearn how to communicate. Yeah.
I will say two things. Going back to the how did you know question, I was lucky to grow up in a family where my parents were workaholics and ambitious in a big way, but never at the expense of our family. And I think that that is actually really rare. Most people who are intensely driven in their work and what they do will, you know, the way I put it is most people, if their ambition is here, their family might be here, or their family might even be here. But even if it's here in terms of value, that means that when push comes to shove, you're going to choose your ambition and career over your family. And then for people who are very family oriented, I'd say family might be here and career might be here. Career might just be the thing that pays the bills to allow them to spend time with family. And what's super unique is somebody who is extremely ambitious in their work life and what they want out of life, not just, you know, just the expectations that they have for themselves. And then their partner, their family is right here. Not right here, not right here, right here. Which means that, and I think that that was what was special and that's what made me realize that this was my person. And because we were both like that, and I think that's really rare. Where, and I'll give you some examples of how I knew. But basically it's, I'm never going to ask Alex, like I know how seriously he takes his work and what he's doing in the world and his ambitions. And so I'm never going to ask him to give that up unless I really need him to give that up for me. And so an example of that is, you know, I'm pregnant right now. And do I feel like he needs to be there at every appointment and do everything? No, because we have an amazing partnership. But I will tell him, and I don't feel any way about that. I think about it as we're a team, and this is the thing I actually need you to come to. That, and because I know what it means to give up that hour or that 3 hours or whatever it is.
And I think that also makes it like a heck of a lot easier to believe you, or to like know that when you're, because we value stuff, when it's like, hey, I need you to do this. Mm-hmm. I'm like, okay, that's real. Like I 100% need to go do that now.
Yeah. And I knew this at the beginning, because like when inevitably, right, if you feel so certain on day one, it's not like everything's going to be perfect after that. You suddenly find out that there's this person who you align with in so many ways, but wait, there's things we don't understand about each other. How can that be true? You go through this phase of like disillusionment of, oh my God, what happened? And I knew that this was a partner because we would both stop what we were doing to fix the thing that we were, to fix the relationship. And it was never that the relationship took a back seat. We both kind of just instinctively knew this is how we balance work and the relationship. And honestly, like that's all we've done for, like that's all we do with our time. Like we spend time with each other, we go to work, that's kind of it. And that's what we love. And I think we're so on the same page about that, that is, and then that's like fairly rare to find in a person. And so I think that that's a big reason why we both knew pretty immediately.
Did you both know that you needed to be with somebody who was similarly passionate about what they do? Or did you think that it would be easier? I have a male friend who says it's hard to have two people trying to save the world in the relationship. Yeah, I'm curious how you thought about that. And then also curious how you will think about that. You know, you're about to have your first child. When you have children and how that might change or evolve, or what your relative roles.
I mean, I can't tell you the number of people who told me that I needed to find a guy who can calm me down and you know, balance me out, calm me down, take care of things.
I had all that same advice too, that you like find your equal balance to it, whatever, like that you're too intense. You need like less intensity or else the relationship will not work.
And that's not what you guys did.
But with a caveat that you do calm me down when I need to calm down. You do balance me out when I need to be balanced out. But you are doing that in service of my ambitions.
That's a super good point. Yeah, it's not to say that you are reduced to like you are either ambitious or you're not, or you're work oriented or you're family oriented. It's like what keeps you from being spiky at both of those? Like I can actually be a good partner and I can actually be highly ambitious. Especially if you find someone who isn't purely a like, time equates to X feeling or benefit. I do think that some people are just a raw, like, you show me you love me by just pure hours. And I think that that's one of the things that we benefit from having a similar, maybe ambition profile or something. And that, like, I really understand the value of each of those hours.
Yeah.
And the expectation is never on time. It's, you know, is like, yeah, how we like battle through a specific scenario or thing that we might mm-hmm. need.
On the kids part, I think having kids like really terrified us for a very long time and wondering, as I'm sure it does a lot of people with our profile, how do you fit it all in? Because basically to build these companies and for pretty much our entire careers, we've willingly given up or traded any semblance of social life, like any, you know, we don't do vacations, like our apartment's not, like there's nothing on the walls. We never decorated a place, like just all of this stuff that maybe is more that like we could have spent our time on. We didn't, just because it wasn't in our priority set. Like our priority set was building our relationship, having fun in the ways we have fun, which is oftentimes like walking to the ferry building and like talking about our ideas and things like that and building something. I think we're both just, that's just what we like to do. And so I think kids really terrified us for a while. And the way we kind of came about, hey, we want to have kids and start a family is that we both knew that we'd regret it if we didn't. And it seems like this thing that you can't really understand until you go through it. And we just had, again, like this confidence and this like gut feeling that this is absolutely the right thing to do. This is like a thing to build. But we're both really inspired by the idea of living one life with our family, you know, not having a here's our kid life and here's our life. It's really just like integrating the whole thing. And I think that with me, I mean, this is crazy timing. I didn't plan any of this, but selling my company last year, then I've now exited completely out of it. That was part of my requirements to for the sale. And now being pregnant, having our first kid coming in 6 weeks maximum. So anytime now up to 6 weeks, we're in this place where we can actually do this thing together. And so I was messaging you, this was in December. So I was telling you a month ago, I was telling you, oh, I think we're going to work together. I'll go work for Alex. And I joke that it's the cheapest form of childcare is just taking the baby to the office. But actually, like, we're both very excited about that idea. And this idea that we can like build something together, truly, and have all aspects of our life involved in that.
Yeah. So does that mean that, well, how many kids do you expect to have?
You know, it's so funny. We were like, for a while, it was like, how could we fit a kid into this world? Like into this like tiny boxed in life that we have and like really time constrained. And I feel like it went from like, we'd be crazy to think that we're going to go through life and not have kids and build a family.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe we should have a kid to like, let's have like 10 kids.
We're totally in the boat of like, let's have as many kids as possible. Yeah. Like
from like scarcity to abundance mindset in such a fast turnaround.
And so Tara, when women think about kids, one thing they think about is, hey, I've been running a company for a while. You know, if I have kids, does that mean I'm no longer going to be starting companies again? Does that mean I'm the predominant sort of, you know, caretaker? Some people care about sort of this sense of fairness or equality. And so, you know, is there 50-50? But if this person is running a company, how can they feasibly do it? So I can only have one or two kids. Like, what do you say to those people? Or how do you sort of reconcile these tensions?
Yeah. I think for me, anytime I start thinking about, are we each doing our fair share or is it 50-50? That is a path of destruction. It's never 50-50. It's never a fair share. I think about it as what phase of life are we in? And honestly, the last 5 years, I think you have supported me more than I have supported you. And I look towards these next how many ever years, and I'm honestly like very excited to support you in a really big way, which is why I feel really confident going into this pregnancy, feeling like Alice is telling me I'm way too confident. I'm at this place where I'm like, I can birth this baby myself. I don't need a doctor. Like, just like I'll squat and have this child. Like, this is, we're good. We're good. But in all seriousness, I think about it as I've learned a lot from pregnancy as well, where, you know, yeah, it's taxing on the body and it's difficult and you have insomnia and you have back pain, and you have all these things, but it's like anything in life. If I focus on the 5% of me that feels really different and uncomfortable, I'm going to be unhappy and I'm going to be like, that part's going to magnify. But if I focus on the 95% of my life that's actually very normal and going fine, I have all the energy to do all kinds of things. And so, you know, granted, I'm 8 months pregnant. This kid hasn't come out yet. But through it, like I found out mid-selling the deal. So sold the deal. So sold the company. The day we closed was my 20-week big anatomy scan ultrasound. Like, I can't tell you how chaotic it was, but it's like we can do so much more than we think we are capable of if we feel like we are integrating all aspects of our life. If we feel like we need to separate these things out and other people need to give their fair share, like, these are mind traps and we have to get rid of the mind traps. I actually think that women are told the wrong story here. You need to make sure that you have all that, you know, that your partner is doing half the work and you're supported and all these things. Honestly, it's like, how do you eliminate as much of the victim mindset as possible and realize that you are doing something like super incredible by bringing life into this world? And how can you fit it in harmony with the rest of your life? And so I plan on starting another company, or who knows? Like, I'm not done yet. I'm definitely not ready to retire. I have like so many dreams that I want to accomplish. And I just can't imagine a world in which the most amazing thing that ever happens to us could be limiting in any way. So much of it is mindset.
Yeah, it's interesting. Do you wish you had kids sooner if you're trying to have 10? Or because a lot of people, you know, you were 28 when you started your first company, right? So you probably couldn't do it.
I'm 34 now. Yeah. So 34 now, first kid. I personally absolutely wish that we'd started earlier. I think that life, you make whatever you want to happen in life, you make it happen. Life expands or contracts in whatever way that you want it to. Then again, like, you know, I am very lucky that I'm having a easy pregnancy and have been healthy and have been like a health nerd for the last 10 years and all of this stuff. I think that we'll see. I'm also like very open to adopting. I'm very open to embryos. So I don't know. It's like you wish you'd done things differently, but you'd also, life happens.
Yeah. Isn't it? I mean, I'm curious, like when you look at your female friends or peers and you look at their ambition level, I put ambition in quotes. What do you see? Do you see that they're just as ambitious? Do you see that they sort of take a big step back and they're like, hey, this was the CEO phase of my life. Now I'm in the motherhood phase of my life and, you know, supporting my partner and in his efforts. And we're a team and I'll lead most of the sort of family, and most could be 60%. It could be 90%. There's a range, obviously. Yeah. I guess, what are you seeing among like, what realistically should women know about sort of, you know, what happens in that phase?
Yeah. I think what I've seen personally is that people are who they are. And if they, like, the people who maybe change their ambitions to focus on family ambitions versus career ambitions, they were always going to do that. And I think that there are signs of who people are way in advance. And so I have friends who are just as career ambitious, if not more. I have friends who are like, I remember talking to Julia Hartz, who is now the CEO of Eventbrite.
Yeah, she's going to come on the show too.
Oh, I love it. I love it. So she and Kat, she's actually one of the people who told me, she's like, Tara, when we started the company, like, we would just bring the baby to get to the office and we just like put him under the desk. And they just recently had a couple more kids, and their other kids are like teenagers. And so they're living this like very full life. And there's examples of that everywhere. It's not the norm, but there's so many examples of that. And I find so much inspiration in that.
Yeah. Zooming out, when you are giving advice to your single friends who are, you know, early 30s, late 20s, mid 30s, and they're great people, but it just hasn't worked out. What kind of advice are you typically, like, what common patterns are you seeing in your peer groups, you know, men or women, as to why they're single?
Bunch of things. I think the older you get, the more you get stuck in your ways and the higher stakes you have for people. But at the same time, the smaller the population is that is available. And so you're basically, these curves don't intersect anymore.
Yeah, especially for women, right?
Yeah, I think that's another big thing is, hey, age matters. And I know that we all want to pretend like it doesn't, but it really does for women. We have a biological clock. Men can keep dating younger and younger. Like there's so much that, yeah, it's not great. I'm not happy about it. I wish it weren't that way, but just have to accept reality. I think the first, like the advice in general, if I had to sum it up, I'd say search for truth. And that is like truth in just these societal dynamics and like where we are today. And the fact that we have not, you know, not figured out, you know, autonomous wombs and things like that yet, although I am invested in a friend's company that is doing that. And then I think the other thing is, and this is what I tell everybody, is like, you have to be the person who you want to be in order to attract the type of person who you want to attract. And so always start with yourself. All self-improvement is relationship improvement. And so at the end of the day, like, I think we don't work on our relationship as much as we work on ourselves and how we show up. And that's the only thing that we can control. And I think very similarly to friends who are single and who are looking for the right person, it is make yourself the most attractive version of yourself possible at a very real place, from a very real place, not superficially attractive, but like make it real. And that person will show up, no doubt.
You went on 60 or so dates. Do you recommend people do something like that, of also having a wide approach initially or be open-minded, you know, initially to sort of see what they like and like, what did you learn from me, 60 people?
Only if you're insane like me. No, I think our story is so telling because there's so many different ways. I went on those 60-ish dates, first dates, and analyzed every single one of them. It was basically user research was what I was doing. And I did that, though, because I wanted to learn. And that's how I learn. And so I'd say, like, do whatever you can to do a little, you know, do a little retro. That's what I would suggest, to say, look at your past relationships, look at your past efforts, see what works, see what doesn't work, find your blind spots, and then go figure out how to solve them. Or just go on random dates and then meet in person one day. I don't know.
Were you going to ask Alex only?
Yeah, I was going to ask, what do you think about that? What would you tell what do you tell your single friends?
I think it is a bit nuanced for who it is. Like, I do feel like there's a lot of people who are just like making a game out of dating rather than it be like what is the purpose of this? And yeah, that can definitely like saying I'm like optimizing for going on dates is very different than optimizing for like trying to find a person or a partner. I do think a lot of people are, this is so different in this, because I'm like, don't be overly analytical about it. You should just follow like curiosity. Like, who did you like that you were, who did you enjoy and just want to spend more time with? And it's sometimes as simple as that. And I think that the like next layer, I feel like this is like the midwit meme, right? Like on one side, you're just like, me like girl, hang out with her. And then in the middle, you're like, I'm going to do all the math and I've got my spreadsheets and look at the frequency that I have in my funnel and all the different, you know, ratios in my pipeline. And at the end, you're just like, the Jedi is just like, I was like, girl, spend time.
But sometimes people are, you know, tend to like whether you like the bad boy or the crazy girl or whatever, like tend to be drawn to people who maybe aren't.
Maybe that goes back to Tara's part about the focus on yourself then.
Yeah, it breaks everybody. I mean, it's like my dad's advice, right? He keeps telling me and my brother, he's like, it's not that hard. Just whoever makes your heart beat fast, like just marry them.
It can be that easy.
Yeah.
Yeah. In contrast to this woman, Meltem Demirers, who seems like a great person otherwise, but she had this tweet yesterday, went viral, that was, no longer interested in romantic love. It's silly and disadvantages women. I'm interested in strategic alliances, merging bloodlines, joining clans, and building an empire. The only thing that matters is loyalty, consistency, and shared vision. This is the energy of 2025.
It sounds like an arranged marriage to me.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. What's old is new. I mean, is there something about them tending to work better? Or is that kind of cope or just like a fantasy?
No. I think it that is true for one reason and one reason only, which is there's lots of horror stories around arranged marriages too. But for the most part, they work fine. And the reason is you go into it without the option to come out. You will make it work. No one would look at my parents and like know and say that they were made for each other, right? But they have built the relationship that sustained our family and did all these amazing things for us. And I think that even though I don't want anything, I don't want that. I wanted something different. I have to like respect that is a way to achieve something, you know, a foundation. At the end of the day, you want a foundation. I'm personally a very big believer in one-to-one relationships, like actually having a life partner that you can build a foundation with. And I think it's like because of the, who do I put on my emergency call list? And at the end of the day, you want to have one person and you want that to be a bi-directional thing where it's, if someone calls me for an emergency with Alex, I know that there's no one else who's going to answer that call. Like it's going to be me. And so I will drop everything and go do that thing. And I want that vice versa. And I think that analogy extends to so much in life that you do together. And it's just so much more powerful when you have two people try to accomplish the same thing.
You know, I'm going back to the example of the phenomenon where you're sort of with someone and it feels, in some ways it's easier if it's not going well, because then it's like, hey, let's just break up.
Yeah, yeah.
But if it's something where it's like a 9 out of 10 or a 9.5 out of 10, but just doesn't feel 10 out of 10, and I'm trying to depersonalize it. So maybe just generalizing, when you see people have that phenomenon, what's typically happening there?
So hard. Okay. Don't quote me on this, but let me just say, I actually think that guy and I, we could have been happy together. I think so. And I think that if I was 35 and we were together, I would have, like, I think it's probably a better decision to make that work than it is to walk away and try to find 100%. Because again, it's like what you build, it's not who you find. But because I was 27, I rolled the dice a little bit. And I don't know that I recommend that for everybody. I'm a high risk person. And so I rolled the dice and I won that. I won the lottery on that, two analogies, but you know. And I think that what ends up happening is a couple of things and why people end up that way. It's that you're not, it's kind of taboo to study this stuff and analyze it and learn about it. And, you know, it's supposed to be just you meet somebody and it works out and all of that. And so people don't think about it. And then suddenly musical chairs and the music stops when you're 27, 28, 32, sometime in between there. And everybody just marries who they're dating at that point. And so you don't even stop to think about, is this my person or not? It's just the person who you're with at that time. And so I think that tends to happen quite a bit. I've seen it with my friends quite a bit. I've seen it with friends who've gotten divorced quite a bit. Like, it's just this game of musical chairs without much thought into it. For other people, I actually think that the 90% or 95%, you know, huge caveat that the 5 or 10% that's not there is not something that's like a total deal breaker or dangerous in any way or anything like that. I actually think that for a different type of person, that is the right person for them. My maybe hot take or controversial thought is that there's a lot of people that me and Alex could have been with. Like, I think there's a lot of people that we could build our lives with and be on some sort of happiness scale with. The difference is that our lives would turn out differently. We might have had to compromise in certain dreams, or we might have had to be different people, but humans are adaptable. And I think it's actually better to build a loving relationship with somebody and maybe sacrifice like a dream or two that you had for your own individual life than it is to go your entire life searching for that perfect thing and never finding it. I say that because, and I think it's actually pretty controversial to say that, but like I say that because I've had incredible growth and joyous moments with so many different types of people. And I think that if we're willing, we're much more adaptable than we might believe at first.
Yeah. And so is it fair to say that is the right analogy like, hey, you had this sort of checklist is maybe too crude, but sort of list of things, of ways in which you wanted to feel sort of regularly, and you had this ideal lifestyle, and other potential people or previous people hit some of those things enough such that it's like 95% there and 90% there, and then Alex just hits all of them, or he hit all of them like
it's purely I got lucky. And we say that all the time, like we got super lucky, and there is a game of luck. And that's why it's like, start earlier, start getting serious about this earlier, there's a book that I used to send all my friends I found it in my 20s. It's called The Defining Decade. And it basically talks about why most people think about their 20s as their throwaway years, but actually your 20s are some of the most important years to learn, to experiment, to start to try things out in the world. And dating is like a really, really important one of those where you want to really understand the type of person you are and the type of person you want to be with and just all of it. And I think that the more, it's like anything, right? The more iterations and like reps you can get in, the more you learn and the better you become at selecting. And if you just do it later, you have less time, less optionality, all of that.
I do think that the slightly other stance I take on that though is like investing in yourself, like the aspects, like it's not, I think like getting up reps or shots on goal doesn't count for anything if your form is not good.
And
I do think that there's a world where it's just like, the answer is not just like go on more dates and like assess how you felt. And it's really like you're the problem.
Great. That is like what I mean.
Maybe that's like table stakes. And I think on top of that is building.
That's what I mean for iterations. Like if you're, I mean, think about it like a product, right? If you're just like building something and like throwing it out into the world, but you're not actually listening to any of the feedback, you're not doing retros on it, you're not like understanding what's going on and the why and getting back to first principles. Like if you're not doing that work, you're not actually moving forward. And it's the exact same thing. Like you have to do the work. You always have to do the work. Nothing in life is free.
Totally. Are there any other hot takes either on dating or relationships or messages that we tell men or women that we feel should be edited that we haven't gotten to on this podcast that we want to make sure that we share?
I mean, I've said this, but I think a big one is life is better with a partner. Like it is. Don't fall into the trap of independence is the best thing ever.
Yeah, I like didn't appreciate that as much.
Yeah.
Until I like started noticing what we're building together. Yeah, I definitely didn't appreciate that as much.
Yeah.
Like the actual building of the relationship and the thing that you kind of have now that's hard to explain and make tangible or whatever. Yeah, and how much the effort is like put on the building rather than the, I don't know, maybe selection. Or
when you have friends that you feel that are in relationships and you're like, this doesn't seem like the right match. It seems like 75%, 80%. they might say back to you, hey, but life is better, better with a partner, and oh, I could probably change it, I could fix it. Or like, yeah, what is sort of your take on that when friends and peers ask you honestly? And I guess you sort of alluded to it, Tara, it kind of depends on how old you are, how many more shots you have on goal, sort of your sort of personality type, if you are the type of person who is going to put yourself out there to find the 10 out of 10. But anything else you want to say, like when people know it's right versus when they should sort of try again?
Is it the superficial stuff, like the nice to haves that are missing, or is it the need to haves? Like, you should never, ever tolerate a relationship where you don't have trust, like complete trust, and where you feel like you can't tell the person everything or be yourself. Like those types of things are just complete non-negotiables. And I think it's helping people understand for friends that, you know, hey, here are the things that maybe are really important to look at. The other thing I'll say is that you just, my friends who I look at them and I'm like, oh, you're in like a 95% relationship or 90%. Who am I to say that? Like, I have no idea what's going on in their relationship. So unless they come and tell me that, I don't actually believe it. So I don't have opinions on my friends' relationships unless the only opinion I have is how they speak about their partner. Like, I think that is the most telling piece of it. How they speak about them, how confident they feel, like all of those things. But yeah, don't expect to go into a relationship and have everything be done your way. I will say that one of the things I've learned in any relationship, not just a romantic relationship, but whatever, like teammates and friendships and all the things, it only takes one person to change a relationship. It doesn't take both people. And what I mean by that is, so like if you've read the book Never Split the Difference by Chris Voss, I actually got Alex used to make fun of me. He was like, don't use any of that negotiation tactics on me. But there are aspects of it. It's less about like negotiation. And it's more just like, how do you break the barriers down to let people in and actually feel like you're on the same page and the same team so that you can get somewhere together? Like that's really what it's about. And I think what I learned through that is there's this concept of, I'm going to butcher it, but it's essentially just it's reiterating what the person said. So it's like responding to what they said, but saying it back to them in a way that shows that you understand what they mean and feel. And that is one of the most powerful tools, I think, for relationships. And it can actually change. You don't need the other person to change your relationship. Because one of the biggest things is like when people feel like they aren't seen, heard, understood, we put up walls. When we put up walls, like everything starts to crumble and break down. And when I put up a wall, Alex automatically puts up a wall, and then my wall gets bigger, then his wall gets bigger, and then we're in this like downward spiral. But if instead I can actually make, and the reason we put up walls is because we don't feel understood. But if instead I can, with my words, show him that I'm deeply trying to understand what he's saying, and if he thinks I truly understand how he feels, we'll actually start to have a productive conversation. And this has nothing to do, like Alex doesn't have to change at all. I just have to change my behaviors. And I think that's one example, but it doesn't take two people to change a relationship. It just takes one. The other person will, by definition, start to mold as well.
Yeah, no, I think that's a great phrase. Gearing towards closing here, but I'm curious if there's any challenge that you guys have faced that's worth sharing in terms of something that other couples could either learn from. Or if there's anything else you want to make sure to leave our audience with?
Lots. I can speak to one that was really important for me personally. And it has to do with boundaries, even though I hate that word because I think it's overused. And I think it's used as a weapon sometimes to say, I need boundaries, which means I'm going to cut you out of my life. But I grew up in an Indian family where like we had no boundaries. It's like, love is being there all the time and showing up all the time and saying yes all the time and giving up everything that you want for whatever anybody else needs. Like that's what love was. And it was also the female role is to give up everything for the male role. And when Alex wanted to do stuff, I couldn't do what I wanted. And that was just a rule in my head. And we had this big disagreement that we couldn't get over for months, which is basically running into this concept of I felt like I was giving so much of myself and Alex felt like he couldn't understand my communication style and I was getting resentful. And I think this like very similar pattern that can happen with men and women, very common pattern. And I just like one day I got so fed up and Audible recommended some like book on dating, like boundaries and dating to me. And I was like, whatever, I'm just going to read this book. And it turns out it was like a very Christian book. and I'm not Christian. And so like, all right, I'm just going to be open-minded, ignore the stuff that doesn't feel like it resonates, and just like listen to the stuff that does. And it totally changed my life and our relationship in that I realized the only way that we're going to be successful is if I do what I want and Alex does what he wants. And then we just like, it just has to work that way. I can't keep trying to predict what Alex wants and changing my behavior because I think I'm trying to make him happy. No one can make another person feel a certain way. Like, we have to be responsible for our own feelings, our own actions. And I think there's one very clear example where in the mornings, I actually like, I love quiet time and journaling and meditating and things like that. And like, I need my space. But when we first started dating, he wants, like, Alex all, like, doesn't need that. He can like hang out all the time. And I'm much more like introverted in that sense. And so he'd be like, hey, let's hang out. It's the morning. And I wouldn't want to let him down. And so I'd say yes, but then I'd get resentful because I didn't have my time and all that. And I realized the most important thing is for me to just be me, but I'd lost touch with what that meant because I'm so used to trying to make other people happy that I forgot what it was like to like just do what I want. But as soon as I could reclaim that and just like do the things that I wanted, and you were so good about encouraging me to do the things that I wanted, it's like everything just magically worked because there's no guessing anymore. Like, I'm doing what I want. You're doing what you want. And then if we want the other person to do something else, we just say it. And it makes life, I think, in relationships like so much easier when you can get to that level of clarity.
Yeah, for sure. This is like putting on your mask first.
Yeah. Right?
Like, yeah, I think that's actually really important across lots of different stuff that we've had to learn.
Yeah.
Like, how do you actually take care of yourself first? Because that makes you better for the partner and makes you better for the relationship.
Yeah.
Yeah, people struggle because they don't want to let their partner down, but they don't want to let themselves down, or they don't want to not be true to themselves. And so, yeah, balancing that sort of, you know, reconciling that tension.
It's not, I think people think of it as like selfish at times, but what ends up happening is I do the things that I need. And then I get to a place where I'm like, I want to not do my things because I personally want to do the things you want. I want to hang out. I want to do these other things. And not from a place of guilt or a place of feeling like I'm trying to elicit some emotion from you. It's just genuinely because I want to. And it's funny how that ends up happening. And you just kind of have to trust that because I think it's really uncomfortable for people, especially for women.
Looking in closing and maybe looking towards the future, when you guys think about like the vision of your relationship, you sort of hinted at having a bunch of kids. You sort of hinted at, you know, sort of continuing to build businesses, but how do you sort of think about your future?
You first.
I think it's probably like a step-by-step. I don't think that we have all the answers for what exactly comes next. We'll have to running the playbook that we're running now, which is, you know, valuing the other person and the partnership. And yeah, like, I think that like the growth-minded perspective not just applies to the fact that we're both changing really rapidly. And the important thing that we both value is this kind of like, you know, these underlying concepts that allow you to stay aligned even as you change and grow. But I think that also applies to the relationship and making sure that we're going to be in a bunch of different scenarios we've never been before, one really soon. And we will kind of take that one in stride. And I'm sure there's going to be a lot of stuff that we don't intuitively understand perfectly out of the box, but that's the whole point and part of the journey. So yeah, I'm like excited to, we'll keep like learning those things and taking down new and new experiences that kind of factor into
you. Spoken like a great entrepreneur.
Meanwhile, I'm like, greatness in every dimension possible. Like, we're going to build a whole new. Yeah, yeah. I'm so driven by wanting to maximize like the potential of life. How do we squeeze as much juice out of this life as possible? And like, how do we do all these crazy things? And I think the only thing for us is we're never going to stop, like stop trying. And that is really like, to me, that's super exciting. And then I mentioned this earlier, but like, Alex is starting a company. I'm going to help him. And I think it'll be really fun to actually build something together. There's no rules on this, right? Everyone's like, don't work with your spouse and, you know, do your own thing.
Do you worry about making yourselves crazy or having too much integration?
I'm certain that we will figure it out. It definitely feels like a kind of fairy tale world right now. Like, it's like everything's just amazing. I'm like, how cool would it be? This is like the absolute dream to go like build an empire with your partner.
We're so different too. Like, yeah. We're so different in our strengths and
which almost maybe makes it easier. Like, because there's some stuff that Tara does that I'm just like, it's not even that I don't think I could do at all. Like, I'm not even like, oh, I could try. And then we, you know, maybe she does a little bit. I'm like, no, I just don't have that capability. And that makes it a lot easier. That makes it a lot easier. Tara's like such an unbelievable, oh man, I don't know what the right like words to articulate for this are. She's super off the cuff in these like leadership settings where she'll bring this energy to a room. And it is like incredibly engaging what she's digging into. And it feels really important and purposeful. And she could be talking about like what's for dinner. And I'm just like eating it up. She's exceptionally good at this, like emotionally leading with your heart and like being very captivating.
Rallying people and a cheerleader, basically. Yeah, no, there is that. And then Alex is like the visionary. I mean, years ago in the San Francisco fires, like in 2020, like, you know, I'm here thinking about, all right, where do we get our masks? How do we like get out of town? Like that kind of stuff. And Alex is like, why haven't we figured out how to control the weather yet? Like this needs to be a thing. And then he like goes down this path of like figuring out flame retardant materials and like figuring out how it could like cover a house and like how much would that need to cost. And he's just way out there in terms of like thinking about the future. Like his last company was doing essentially like automating the web before like people knew what that was. And he thinks in a way that my brain can't even comprehend at some point. And so I think it's going to be really fun to see how we both like fit these puzzle pieces together. And also, I'm sure there's going to be moments where we like drive each other crazy. Yeah, totally. But one of my old teammates, a founding teammate of Rupa, is actually now one of Alex's co-founders. So there's so much in the mix here.
Yeah. Well, in closing, I'll say a friend once told me that, you know, some hallmarks of a great relationship are that you admire each other and that you feel super lucky to be with each other. It's evident that you guys have that in spades. So thanks so much for coming on and sharing your story with us and your lessons as well.
Oh, thanks for having us.
This was great.
Thanks for listening to Modern Relationships. Please make sure you're following on Apple, Spotify, or YouTube. If you have a chance, leave us a review or comment on this episode to let me know who else you'd like to hear from on this show. Modern Relationships is a podcast from Turpentine, the network behind Econ 102, Upstream, and Turpentine VC.